Welcome to the Drama Teacher Podcast, brought to you by Theater Folk, the Drama Teacher Resource Company. I'm Lindsay Price.
Hello.
I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. This is episode 174, and you can find any links to this episode in the show notes, which are at theaterfolk.com/episode174. So what are we talking about today? We are talking about Shakespeare. I know we've done a lot on Shakespeare in the past few months, but it is something that comes up time and time again. Shakespeare can be a vital, exciting learning experience. It can also be the worst, most painful kind of experience that makes you never want to look at a Shakespeare play ever, ever again. Our guest today, teacher Chris Maneras, had that kind of experience in high school, but now he's on quite a different footing with his approach when it comes to teaching, performing, and directing Shakespeare. Let's get into it, shall we? All right, I am here speaking with Chris Maneras. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Lindsay. How are you?
I'm excellent. How are you?
I'm wonderful.
Hey, good, good, good. All right, so tell everybody where in the world you are.
I am sitting in my home in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Okay, very good, very good. And how long have you been a drama teacher?
I just completed my 12th year with Guilford County Schools. I'm at my third school, which has been my longest tenure. And I just completed my 8th year at that school, which is Southeast Guilford High School in Greensboro. I have also taught at Lincoln Academy, which is middle school. And my very first year, I taught at Western Guilford High School.
So what keeps you coming back? What keeps you connected to being a drama teacher?
I really think it's kind of a calling. I looked at leaving the profession with all the negativity that teachers are receiving. I have thought about going and getting an administrative license and becoming a principal. I've thought about going out and getting my MFA. And every time, right before I'm about to sign paperwork or to really start studying for the GRE and get down to it, I just look at myself in the mirror and I go, I can't give up teaching. I don't want to give up teaching. And it's really coming back to the students, because even in a really terrible year, and there's always a bright spot, there's always at least one student, usually it's 10 or 15 even in the worst situation, that you can find a bright spot. And it's just the ability to pass on the knowledge that I've received. I had a really awesome theater teacher, a man by the name of Alan Osborne, who went by Oz. And I can't think of doing anything else since my sophomore year in high school. It's always been my dream. I want to be a teacher. And it was always I wanted to be like Oz. He was kind of like a second father to me. He was my dad's best friend. And it's just from there, I just knew that's what I wanted to do. And even on the worst days, I look at myself and I'm like, I just can't give it up.
I think that's wonderful. And I think it's really great to hear that, because I know that we have so many people listening who struggle and who sometimes are in the same boat. It's like, this is the calling that I have. And I love when particularly teachers speak of teaching in that way, because it just shows how important it is, I think. And you're important. You're important, Chris.
Well, thank you.
I guess it's always been, and has it always been drama? What's connected you to drama? Was it just Oz's influence, or?
It was at the age of 3. I remember my mom taking me to see my dad in a community theater production of The Music Man. I don't remember making it through the show. I didn't. But I can remember very early on begging my dad to take me to audition for a show. And when I was in kindergarten, he took me to audition for Oliver. And I was bitten right that very minute. And I also have a degree in history, and it was actually a toss-up of what I was going to teach coming out. I knew I wanted to teach, but for me, it's the fact that I can teach history through theater. I can teach literature through theater. Everything, theater kind of encompasses everything, and I think that's why I really sought that out more than even a teaching history, was to just be able to teach everything in one subject.
Yeah, that there's so many things that we can bring to light and to life through theater. What do you think that it's the most important thing that you are doing in the drama classroom for your students? And what is the most important thing they're learning?
I think the most important thing they're learning is empathy, to be able to see the world through other people's eyes, to be able to understand a historical event or a written text through another person's eyes, not just through their world experiences, but they have to gain other people's world experiences and the ability that theater itself can change them and it can make them think. I guess, okay, there's the biggest point. They can be free thinkers.
I like that. I like that a lot. I think that's something that's really important, even on those dark days, right? When you're struggling, if you can teach anyone to be a free thinker, I think you've done your job, man. I think that's it.
Absolutely. When it's the worst days and somebody gets something, they come to that, they find a realization or they find a truth within themselves or within their circle of friends or within the wider student population or the community. And they're never going to lose that. They may deny it for a while, but they're never going to lose that moment when something clicked in their head or when something really sparked an idea or a feeling.
So our main theme that we're talking about today is Shakespeare. And I've talked about Shakespeare a lot over the past little while with teachers. And I find it's always interesting for me to come back to, because it is something that he is, and his work, the work, is something that puts a lot of fear into teachers and students alike, offers up a lot of really horrible performances as people struggle. And also that moment when everybody is on the same page, some of the most, I think, rewarding experiences. So I would say, Chris, from you know, talking to you, that you have, you like Shakespeare, eh?
It's an understatement. I think it's becoming a little bit of an obsession right now, but.
And why do you think that is?
I think I was like a lot of people, especially in high school. I hated Shakespeare. Absolutely detested Shakespeare. I had an English teacher early on, and I won't name names, but that made Shakespeare boring. I remember reading Julius Caesar in class and wanting to be Julius Caesar so I could get out of it before the third act started. And then it honestly really changed when I was in college at the University of North Carolina, Greensboro. I had a wonderful director, a guy by the name of Michael Campman. He was doing his MFA thesis and chose The Winter's Tale, which if you ask even people who really like Shakespeare can sometimes go,
really,
oh my gosh.
It's not on the list.
It's not, but I auditioned and got a callback and ended up going into callback for like a messenger part. And then he saw something in me and gave me a second callback and ended up reading for The Old Shepherd. And ended up getting cast as The Old Shepherd. And that's kind of where everything changed. And I really start to enjoy Shakespeare. But it probably wasn't until I got really involved with Greensboro Shakespeare in the Park, which is a group that was co-founded by myself, my wife Linda, a friend of ours, Matt Ringrose, and the late Stephen Hires with the Greensboro Parks and Rec, the four of us came together and had this idea to do Shakespeare in the parks of Greensboro. And then I really kind of took off with that that first year with that. Linda and Matt co-directed Macbeth, and I played the role of Duncan, an old gentleman, and also served as TD for that show. And then I've been directing the past 5 years since then. Right now, we are 2 weeks from opening Henry the Fourth, part one.
No, all of the Henrys, right? And what do you think it is? What do you think it is that has just let this spark in you grow? Do you connect to the characters or the stories, or have you found the key to the language? What is it that really excites you?
To me, as an actor, I've been working with a director who has really opened up the language to me. And the first thing that I've really started to focus on is punctuation. I feel that with Shakespeare, well, with all playwrights, punctuation is key. Playwrights use punctuation to make a point, to help the actors find where to breathe, to let us have
our ideas. Very, very important.
Yes.
We spend a lot of time on it.
And I think as a director, as an actor, as a teacher, punctuation has been the key for me. I had my director, Sherry Rayford, who's our artistic director for Shared Radiance. She, one of the things she learned at the Globe was about how this punctuation is so key. And it's kind of one of the key elements for me to unlocking any Shakespeare show. As I'm reading it, I pay very close attention to the punctuation. And I've realized that there are a multitude of Shakespeare works that have different punctuations in the same play based off which folio it is and where you get your copy.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was at some point they, and I'm speaking secondhand, so, but I know that at some point all the semicolons were changed to colons, or all the colons were changed. I think all the semicolons were changed to colons, and about how that sort of, what does that mean? And how does that change where the speeches, the momentum of the speeches and what that means for them. I think punctuation, it's a fascinating thing. To switch from acting hats to teaching hats for a second, how do you talk about punctuation when you're teaching Shakespeare with your students?
When I'm teaching it, what I do is, if we're working just like on a small scene, I'll have them read through the scene once, just stand up on their feet. If it's a monologue or soliloquy, they're just going to read it to me and in front of the class. And I tell them, just read it. And then the next thing I do is I tell them to go back and circle every single punctuation mark in the piece. And then I give a value to each punctuation. For a comma or a semicolon, I said it's kind of like a yield sign. You just slow down. For a period or a colon, you stop, and you can take a full breath there. Same thing with a question mark or an exclamation point. But after that, I also tell them, I said, walk the line until you hit one of those punctuation points. Now, it's an exercise called walking the punctuation. And I say, now walk until you hit the comma or semicolon. Just slow down and just kind of shift your direction so you get a feeling for where that is in the piece. For a period or a colon, stop completely and then turn around and walk in the opposite direction. And then for a question mark, I tell them to raise up on their toes and kind of lift their hands in kind of a like, huh, or what's going on type look, so that they understand that there is a difference between that question mark and the period or colon. And then for an exclamation point, I tell them, when you hit one of those, it's got emphasis to it. So jump in place when you hit that exclamation point. And that's the first way I start to unlock the language. And the first thing I've noticed when I talk to students, and I found this out at ITF, when I was talking to a group of students in my workshop, the first thing they said, it was easier to read because they weren't focused on this old dead guy's language so much as they were focusing on making sure they didn't miss the punctuation. So their bodies naturally take over.
It's all about the movement as opposed to words they don't understand.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that exercise as well, and I just think it's a fantastic thing. Like you get and you physicalize it instead of, you know, having these conversations about IN pictameter, which I think is very valuable, but I think when you're talking about, you know, grade 14, 15, 16 year olds, maybe not so much, that when you stick it in language they understand, let's just look at the punctuation. And the other thing that I heard as well is that with the colon where you consider change direction, with a semicolon you change direction and you don't think about where you're changing direction. Like that was another one action that I heard. But by using this movement and by physicalizing it, you're giving a doorway, I think.
Yeah, it's being able to kind of open up, and it gives you a jumping off point. I think probably the problem, at least for I see as a teacher, is that when I get students, especially if they've already read a couple of Shakespeare's plays, and perhaps we have an English teacher that I know of at our school that is, I hate Shakespeare. I do it because I'm forced to. And the kids get that idea too. And the first thing I tell any of the students that I have that have come from that teacher is, Shakespeare wrote plays. He didn't write books or novels. Books and novels are awesome. I love to sit down and read. But for Shakespeare, I want it up on its feet. And I read Shakespeare for enjoyment sometimes too, but it's not nearly as enjoyable as it is getting up and actually doing Shakespeare.
So let's talk about that. So let's talk about getting students to act Shakespeare. How do you get them to approach character?
The first thing I have them do is still the punctuation. And then I have them go through and I said, find verbs. I said, verbs don't change. They're there. What is the action? What's going on? And I think that's kind of a key thing. I said, I don't care where you're coming from. I said, each actor has to approach things differently. We know some actors like to internalize things and they're all about what's going on here. I said, but every character has an objective. Every character has to have something they want. And if you start to look for those verbs, you'll find what they want. Our verbs tell us a lot of times what we're trying to do. And that's kind of the second thing I have them do after I have them walk the punctuation, is I have them look for the verbs. What's the action?
Okay. And do you get them to get it into their own words once they find when they've walked the physicalization, when they've got the verbs? Do you get them to start like retelling in their own language so they really understand it? Is it language understanding first and then character?
It is some of language understanding. I have them do what I call an improv through, where they improv once they have an understanding of what's going on in the scene. I have them improv it through and just kind of go with their own words. Don't worry about going word for word yet. Just kind of improv through it. And then I'll have them come back down and sit down with the piece and then write it out in their own words. I tell them, please don't use No Fear Shakespeare. I said, No Fear Shakespeare is a great tool to use, but right now I want to know what you think it means, not what No Fear Shakespeare has already translated it to mean. And then from there, we start to really dig into who are these characters. And we use resources. I can't think of the book off the top of my head. I'm such a bad teacher. But there's books out there that have every single, it's basically a dictionary of Shakespeare words.
I bet you can find it. Well, yeah, we can put it in the show notes.
I could probably send it to you once I find it. It's out in my car because I had it at rehearsal.
Let's all wait while Chris goes. No, we will not do that. We'll find it and we'll put it in the show notes. Yeah.
But it's a great tool because it, if Shakespeare said it and it's not a commonly used word, it's in that dictionary and it's there. He's also got one that has all the pronunciation of his words. And once you get to that stage and they're starting to do the research, then they'll start to know what they are saying. And then we can start to, piece by piece, start to figure out exactly who these characters are and what they want.
Do you ever start, and now we're sort of like, I'm switching a little bit now to a director's hat. Do you ever, when you're working on scenes with students or actors, do you ever give them a synopsis of the play first? Do you start from there, or do you start right away with language?
I've pretty much started right away with language. I maybe give a very brief synopsis of kind of the overview themes of the show. For instance, with Henry IV, the first thing I talked about is I talked about the historical aspects of what was going on. You're talking about, you're in the part, you're taking part of the Hundred Years' War. And we talked about some of the characters and whether they were real or not. And talked about the fact that Sir John Falstaff is a fictitious character that's thrown into this world by Shakespeare. And that's really it. I don't try to go into a huge synopsis because I want them to work through it. And that's a lot of what we do at the read-through, is kind of work through it. Just trying to not overload all at once. Because I think that's sometimes why, for me as a director, I've seen Shakespeare fail in my classroom, or even as I was trying to work through a show, is if you try to overload with too much right at the beginning, people, especially kids and even adults, will just shut down.
Oh, absolutely. Because it's like learning another language. And it's if once that barrier goes, then everything's free and clear. But if you're like, okay, well, here's this, well, here's the synopsis, well, here's this, and here's this language, and don't forget the punctuation. I mean, I think anybody would say, I'm not doing this.
Yeah. And it's why we shut down, to break everything off into kind of bite-sized morsels. So once they are cast in a show, and I'm directing a show, especially Shakespeare, the first thing we do is we do a read-through. And I stop after each scene. Okay, so, I should say, giving the luxury time. In a classroom, I stop after each scene and go, okay, what's this about? Kind of, what do we have? What are just kind of some basic things that you're picking up of what's going on here? And I have a stage manager or ASM kind of just write down what they get from the cast and what they get from the class as a whole. And I kind of wish sometimes in directing outside of the classroom, I had that time period to go through these steps.
Yes, it's not in a rehearsal situation. Time is not a luxury.
Unfortunately not.
No, but it's good. I think that's because then you're also, when you're in a classroom situation, you can really start to see who is frustrated, who's struggling. I imagine that anytime you can throw some support or encouragement along the way, that's probably quite helpful too, huh?
Well, yeah, it's kind of the whole adage that I've always heard in theater, as from an actor's standpoint at least, is there are no wrong choices. The only bad choice is the one you don't make. Because we can learn anything from any of our choices. And occasionally you get that kid that gets it right away and they want to be the first to answer. And then I kind of just step in and say, okay, take a step back. And I'll start to call on certain individuals saying, what do you think? Don't worry about it. Just give me your ideas. What are your feelings at this point?
Which can be scary too, in this world where, you know, they're so conditioned right now that there is only one right answer.
And there's one right.
And all the answers are wrong. All the other ones are wrong.
Yeah, we've kind of, I think, educationally speaking, we've kind of killed that idea of the free thinker and the critical thinker, because now everything's about a test, at least it is in North Carolina and a lot throughout the entire United States. There's no longer time to explore, to really find knowledge. You have to be able to bubble it in a timed manner.
A timed manner and a multiple choice option. But we carry on. We carry on. How do you deal with blocking? Because I find that that's something that I see a lot of, that when students get really caught up in the language and I'm watching a production, it can turn into a lot of stillness, because they're not being guided in terms of how they're going to move on stage. And as a director, how do you get students to move with Shakespeare?
I know I keep going back to this punctuation and the words, I tell them, okay, Shakespeare tells you when to move and when to stop. He actually tells you where you're coming in, based on where you, what you're saying, when you're saying it. I let students know up front. In Shakespeare's days, everybody was doubled up. You played multiple roles, and you're going to find out where your character is by just reading it, where they come in. Julius Caesar's great for this because it tells you exactly who's there and where they are in each moment of each scene by when they enter and when they exit. So who's the most important in that scene? Usually if you have a king, in Henry IV Part 1, in any scene that Henry IV is in, it always says, Henry IV enters with flourish, followed by, if it's certain lords, it'll tell you kind of when they come in. As far as once they're on stage, I tell my actors to use their instincts. I really, as a director, I really hate an overblocked show. And I think sometimes there are directors that do wonderful work, that make beautiful stage pictures, but it doesn't feel real to me. For me, I think it's the actor has to move where they feel their character should move, when they feel their character should move. And I'll tell my actors when to enter and when to exit. And unless if they are, I won't say that they're not getting it, but unless if they're making.
Well, unless if they're struggling or.
Yeah,
they're,
if they're
or
struggling.
Yeah.
Or if they're making what I would consider major theatrical errors, like turning their back on the audience.
Yeah, the basics. If they're not incorporating the basics.
Exactly. And also with Shakespeare, I tell all my actors, I said, especially if you're on stage alone or it's an aside, speak directly to the audience. Shakespeare, there was no fourth wall. And I think with so much proscenium-based theater that we're trained on, everybody's like, you have to be in the moment and you stay in your little box and you stay in your little bubble. And Shakespeare's not that way. I said, anytime you can find a reason to speak to the audience, speak directly to the audience. Make them a part of the show. I'm a big believer that it's when Falstaff has a major monologue, soliloquy, right before he's going off to war, where he's standing on a road in Coventry talking about the men. He's used the King's Mark to get a bunch of money and has taken a bunch of lackluster soldiers. And the actor I have playing Falstaff right now wanted to make it very internal and kind of talk to themselves about it. I said, no, talk to the audience. It's funnier if you talk to the audience. This is a relief point. There's a huge battle coming and the audience's tensions are rising. Talk directly to the audience. Make them relax. They'll follow the story more.
Well, I mean, and when you get this, all connects right back to what Shakespeare's audiences were like. Like, Shakespeare's audiences were standing right up close, most of them, and they were being talked to, they were reacting. So the history books say that they were calling back, that they were booing and applauding, and that the reason that there's so much repeat in Shakespeare is because that things needed to be repeated because the audiences were so noisy.
Oh, yeah. The groundlings themselves, yeah, were, if they didn't like something or didn't get something, they were going to throw something.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they spent that was a lot of money for them to come in and have a value of entertainment. And that's another thing that I really try to emphasize to anybody I'm talking Shakespeare to, is cut Shakespeare.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Cut it.
Well, that whole thing in Midsummer Night's Dream where it's like, we see the whole thing with Bottom and Titania, and then, oh, look, here comes Puck. He's going to tell us the whole story all over again. I'm like, we just saw this. We don't need to hear this again.
Exactly. And so much of it, too, is you'd have some of it talking where Shakespeare is basically begging for money from whatever royalty, lord, ladies that's there. So he's got to talk in the heightened flowery language, and then he'll make a joke to the groundlings, but it's the same thing. Cut it. I think any Shakespeare show that goes over 2 hours is too long. Shakespeare now is the traffic, 2 hour traffic of our stage.
Yep.
There you go. 2 hours, I think, is a good run time on a Shakespeare show. If you go under, great. If you go a little bit over, there's more you could have cut. I love to cut Shakespeare, and right now I'm kicking myself because we're 2 weeks from going up, and now I'm finding more things that I'm going, I think I enjoyed Henry IV so much when I was first reading it that I didn't cut nearly enough.
Yep, you were too in love, but that's okay. Awesome. Oh, Chris I really could talk about this kind of stuff for till the cows come home, because I really do think it's important. I think there are lots of tools that teachers can use and directors can use and actors can use that can really key into finding the doorway to Shakespeare. I loved the whole notion of punctuation. I think that is really important, either from the classroom use or from the actor's point of view. The whole idea that if you're directing it, cut the piece, and if you are you want to let your actors find their way, aside from their actors and entrances, look to the script, and that's going to tell you the information that you need to know. If you could give one last piece of advice for those out there teaching Shakespeare, what do you think that would be?
Go online, find a scene or find a play you're at least somewhat familiar with from Shakespeare's work. Download it, print it off, grab a couple of friends, and just go play with it. I think the more we play with Shakespeare in small groups, he's free. Whatever it costs you to print it off, that's your only cost. You don't have to pay royalties. Grab a couple of friends, go play with a scene from Shakespeare, have fun with it, talk about it in those small groups, and then grab a couple of friends and perform a quick bit for it. As actors, as directors, as educators, we need to constantly keep learning. We need to keep constantly trying new things. So go out there, grab a group, and just play with this language. Play with these characters. They're fun. So play.
Oh, I love that. I think that's the one thing. I've stopped acting 20 plus years ago. But I tell you now, if someone said, come be in a Shakespeare play, that's the thing that I would, in a drop of a hat. I think that I totally agree with you. These characters are they're such fun. And that's, I think, if that's the only thing that we can impart on students, I think that is a big success.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you so much, Chris, for taking time out and talking to me today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Chris. Before we go, let's do some theater folk news. Are you interested in a more in-depth look at teaching Shakespeare? Have you listened to this podcast and you're like, Lindsay, tell me more? Or maybe not. But I will suggest something. Let me suggest the Drama Teacher Academy to you. The DTA is the professional development arm of Theater Folk, offering courses, professional learning community opportunities, as well as curriculum, units, and lesson plans. Yep, that's right. All of that is in one place. And we've got a course called Friendly Shakespeare that gives you practical exercises to working with the text, and another course upcoming called Shakespeare's Toolkit, not to mention the available lesson plans and units on Shakespeare. It's all there for you. Check it out at dramateacheracademy.com. Drama Teacher Academy is all one word, or in the show notes, which are at theaterfolk.com/episode173. Are you doing one of our plays? Take a rehearsal picture. We want to see it. Working on a monologue in the classroom? Take a picture and do what? Send it to us. Are you a member of the Drama Teacher Academy and you're using an exercise? Well, take a short video. Maybe it's Shakespeare. Maybe your kids have they've cracked the code when it comes to Shakespeare. Well, take a video, 30 seconds, send it to us, because we want to showcase you on Facebook. We want to brag about you. Send anything and all, as long as it's, pictures and 30-second videos. Send it to tfolk@theaterfolk.com. Finally, where can you find this podcast? We post new episodes every second Tuesday at theaterfolk.com and on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us on youtube.com/theaterfolk and on the Stitcher app. You can subscribe to the Drama Teacher Podcast on iTunes. All you have to do is search for, what is it? Yes, Theater Folk. And that's where we're going to end. Take care, my friends. Take care.